Today, is Donald Trump really in the clear? The results of the Mueller investigation. And in comment, why is a London housing development segregating rich and poor children?
You know, it encompasses so many things that are interesting to me: white collar crime, foreign espionage, the sort of political power in Washington.
John Swain is a senior reporter for The Guardian in the US. He's been following the Robert Mueller investigation. It set out to examine the Trump campaign's ties with Russia ahead of the 2016 election and whether there was any obstruction of justice during the investigation. Now, finally, after nearly 2 years, the special counsel has completed his report, and the president couldn't be happier.
It was just announced there was no collusion with Russia, the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. There was no collusion with Russia.
In fact, he's declaring victory.
There was no obstruction, and none whatsoever. And it was a complete and total exoneration.
But the fine print tells another story. A summary of Mueller's report didn't quite put Trump in the clear, but it wasn't exactly the hallelujah moment the Democrats were hoping for either. From The Guardian, I'm India Rakesson. Today in Focus, now that the Mueller investigation is complete, what's next for Donald Trump? So John, after the Attorney General's summary of the Mueller report was released, President Trump tweeted, "No collusion, no obstruction, complete and total exoneration. Keep America great." So is that it?
No, that's not it. You know, Trump, as usual, isn't being quite right there with the facts. He was vindicated on the issue of collusion. You know, Robert Mueller, according to this summary, found no conspiracy between Trump and his campaign and the Russian government. He was not exonerated on the issue of obstruction of justice. Mueller specifically wrote that he did not find that the president had committed a crime, but he did not exonerate the president. The attorney general and the deputy attorney general, who were both appointed by Trump, decided not to proceed with any kind of prosecution or to find that Trump did obstruct justice, but it was not a total exoneration on that. And in fact, Mueller clearly did find some evidence of obstruction. He found some evidence that went against that as well, but it was a far murkier question on the issue of obstruction.
There was that kind of sense of relief and, like you said, boasting as well. But has he read the whole report?
As far as we understand, he hasn't read the whole report. I mean, he may have done. He's empowered to request it from the Attorney General. The Attorney General works for him. We have not been told that he has read it.
So who has read the whole report?
Well, we know that the Attorney General, William Barr, has read it. Mueller has read it, obviously, and we presume his team. And so the group is small. You know, members of Congress have not read it yet. They've only received this four-page summary. Members of Congress are going to be requesting it.
And people are dying to get their hands on it because there's been a huge build-up. So take us back, remind us, what was the original investigation? What were the original parameters?
There were two main areas. Mueller was asked to look into Russia's interference in the 2016 election. You could basically summarize that as being a counterintelligence investigation. He was asked to get to the bottom of, you know, what they did, why, who did it. But the second half of Mueller's investigation was essentially a criminal investigation. Were there any links and was there any coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia? So during the 2016 campaign, the FBI and, you know, US spies essentially were getting hints and they were picking up chatter and getting pieces of intelligence that suggested some untoward things involving the Trump campaign and Russia. There was this foreign policy advisor on the Trump campaign, George Papadopoulos, and the US was told by the Australian ambassador to the UK that Papadopoulos was boasting about how Russia had emails relating to Hillary Clinton and the Democrats and were going to release them.
Former Trump campaign aide George Papadopoulos has pleaded guilty to lying to investigators with the Mueller probe about his contacts with Russians.
That, according to the U.S. authorities, was the first major tip that led them to open this investigation. And leading from that, there were other things. There was Michael Flynn, the National Security Advisor.
Retired General Michael Flynn did call the Russian ambassador the same day President Obama announced sanctions on Russia for the hacking during the presidential election.
Who had these undisclosed conversations with the Russian ambassador over the phone. And so that all took place before Mueller was even appointed. That was when the FBI under James Comey were quietly looking into this themselves. After Trump became president, it was revealed that this investigation was going on. And then Trump fired James Comey.
Breaking news, President Donald Trump has fired FBI Director James Comey. Now, this
and because he did that, and because there were these questions about whether Trump was firing him to end this investigation, Robert Mueller was appointed as a special counsel, a kind of outsider who was free from conflicts of interest and bias to really get to the bottom of this.
Now, the temperature has gone down a little bit, don't you feel?
I feel like Washington, D.C. exhaled. The entire town, Congress, the White
House. Now there's a process, and the process is underway.
Okay, so it's widely known as the Mueller Report. Who is Robert Mueller?
Robert Mueller is a Vietnam War veteran, a former director of the FBI, and a former career prosecutor as well. He was seen as a fair dealer, as a straight shooter, all those sorts of cliches about people that are sort of fairly trustworthy. And a lot of people said, a lot of people noted, is essentially the polar opposite of Donald Trump.
What did he find?
He found a lot of criminal activity by people around Trump, but he didn't charge any of them with anything relating to the election. So Paul Manafort.
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
Donald Trump's campaign chairman was found to be laundering money, essentially, and committing vast tax fraud. He was found to be using offshore shell companies to transfer money from pro-Russian Ukrainian politicians. And then there's Michael Cohen, who was Donald Trump's personal lawyer and fixer for about a decade.
I'm obviously very loyal and very dedicated to Mr. Trump. I think he's going to be not just a good president, I think he's going to be a great president. He's going to be the president.
He also was involved in massive tax fraud, in bank fraud, and he also implicated the president most directly in a campaign finance crime.
Tonight, from the president's lawyer, a stunning admission. Michael Cohen acknowledging in a statement that he used his own personal funds to facilitate a payment of $130,000 to adult film star Stormy Daniels.
U.S. prosecutors judge that to be a federal crime because essentially Trump and his people were secretly making undeclared payments to people to help their presidential campaign, and you can't do that. So the investigation was sprawling and wide-ranging. There were like 2,800 subpoenas, 500 search warrants. They interviewed 500 people, and they got some criminal indictments and criminal convictions. And they got charges against a lot of Russians who were committing these hacking and leaking offenses that, according to the US, were aimed at helping Trump.
To say this report was highly anticipated on the left would be an understatement, I think you'd agree.
I would agree. I mean, it is an understatement. Lots of senior Democrats for months now have been saying we just have to wait for Mueller.
Look, I'm going to wait for the Mueller report.
And whether that was their answer to, are you going to impeach Trump?
Wait for the Mueller report. The public will see. The one thing we should
be
doing.
Are you going to pursue him for his business taxes and his personal taxes, all this sorts of stuff? And the fact is, Mueller has come, and the summary we've seen is not what these Democrats were hoping.
He did almost come to represent a sort of supernatural force for the Democrats. What were they hoping the report would say?
Basically, Democrats have been quite short-sighted, I think. A lot of, on the more extreme end, they've been holding Mueller out as this saviour. You know, you've been able to buy candles, almost like a sort of religious tribute to Mueller.
Candles? What, of his face?
Of his image, almost like a sort of religious icon. And sort of crazy people on Twitter have been writing books which depict Mueller as a sort of cross between a muscle man and Superman and all these sorts of crazy things. People
that sounds
really
pretty
did.
Dangerous, really, to put that much hope into somebody.
Well, I think that's right. I think it really shows that it was short-sighted and wishful thinking that this guy, who he is a registered Republican, he has been for all his life, was somehow going to swoop in and essentially reverse the 2016 election for Democrats. That was never going to happen.
And let's just take a second to talk about the Attorney General. So this guy, William Barr, it's his role now to summarize this report. This is what we've all got access to. That's been made public by him. And he was appointed by Trump, wasn't he? So is there any reason for people to think that the summary doesn't provide maybe a full or an accurate picture?
There's a lot of concern on one particular issue with William Barr, and that is that when Mueller was carrying out his investigation and when William Barr was a sort of private citizen still at home, he wrote a private memo.
I wrote the memo because...
As a former Attorney General, he's had the job before under George H.W. Bush. He wrote a memo to the Justice Department basically saying, I am very concerned about Mueller's investigation going too far, and I don't think he should be allowed to question the president on the issue of obstruction of justice.
And I thought it would have a chilling effect going forward over time.
And perhaps that's why Trump gave him the job. He was appointed by Trump. He is a conservative. He's a Republican. The fact that Barr took it upon himself to clear the president of obstruction of justice, given that he has this background, has concerned a lot of Democrats and a lot of other sort of legal observers. And so people are very, very keen to see what Mueller said himself before Barr took the decision to clear Trump.
So how have the Democrats responded to the report summary?
I think some Democrats have responded with shell shock. They didn't expect this report to be quite so good for Trump. They didn't expect Trump would be able to crow about it being, in his mind, a total exoneration. You know, we know it's not quite that simple, but it's pretty good for him. Some Democrats have, I think, quite quickly moved on to saying that we need to know more.
The American people have a right and a need to know. The underlying evidence that supports that report should be made public.
Yes.
The Attorney General Barr should be called to testify under oath before the United
Absolutely.
States Congress.
Absolutely.
And in fact, Gerald Nadler, who is a congressman from New York who controls the House Judiciary Committee, has already, I think it was within an hour of the summary coming out, said we're going to be having William Barr into our committee to answer some questions on this. So if those hearings are public, which I expect they will be, that's going to make for some high-stakes drama.
So the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, has previously said she didn't want to bring impeachment proceedings against President Trump.
What is the motivation? I don't think we should impeach a president for political reasons.
Is there any reason to think that she might now change her mind with the report being out?
I doubt it, to be honest. I doubt there's a reason that she would change her mind now, because if you look at it as a big picture, it doesn't look great for Democrats to receive a report saying essentially the president has been cleared and then say, well, we're going to impeach him anyway. You know, speaking personally, my own analysis, if you like, is that Pelosi was right to be prudent, because impeachment, as was shown under Clinton, is an incredibly divisive and incredibly painful process for everyone involved. And to succeed in actually impeaching Trump and getting rid of him, they would need to have two-thirds of the Senate, which is already controlled by Republicans anyway, two-thirds of the Senate to go along and approve that. And they're just not going to get that. You know, they just are not the numbers right now and probably ever.
Okay, so impeachment is probably off the table for now. And Trump's opponents are pretty disappointed. But this isn't the only investigation happening, right?
That's right. The Mueller investigation has spun off a number of other investigations, which may yet damage Trump and people around him far more seriously than this Russia investigation. One of them is into Trump's inauguration and how it raised money potentially from foreigners. You know, we at The Guardian have actually found and reported on foreigners who seem to have donated illicitly to Trump's inauguration. And there are others out there, I'm sure. Trump is still, it seems, under investigation for this campaign finance scheme that Michael Cohen, his lawyer, has been sent to prison for, where they paid hush money to the porn star Stormy Daniels. There are charges building up all over the place for Trump and people around him, so it is very possible that this victory will be short-lived.
President Trump has already started gearing up for the 2020 election, as have dozens of Democratic candidates. What does the conclusion of the Mueller investigation mean for Trump's presidential campaign?
I think, actually, these things pass quicker than we expect. By the time the 2020 election campaign begins in earnest, Trump's ability to really marshal people behind him by saying, I was pursued in a witch hunt, it's kind of messy. It's in the past, and I'm sure Trump will use it to rile up his base and say, you know, remember that time we were all being pursued by the witch hunt? But I actually think it's going to have limited purchase on other people that Trump might bring into his tent, if you like.
So, John, where does all of this leave us? There are all these other pots on the boil. He's still under other investigations. Do you think the question about Russian involvement in the election is ever going to go away?
Russia's involvement in the election and the fact, seemingly, that it was aimed at helping Trump win is at this stage not really arguable. At the very least, Russia was engaged in this operation to help Trump win. Trump's advisors, some of them, were privy to bits of that. You know, they might not have known the entire conspiracy. They might not have known exactly what was going on, but they were told, for example, Donald Trump Jr. was told that Russia's government was trying to help Donald Trump win. And the fact is, they didn't do anything about it. They did not alert the FBI. They did not say, hang on a minute, you know, that's not quite right. We need to put a stop to that. They let it happen at the very least. And I think because of that, questions probably will never go away among some people. You know, Robert Mueller has said, I did not find a conspiracy. But the fact that there were these strange interactions and the fact that so many people lied about these interactions when questioned about them and are going to prison, some of them, for lying, it just means that there will always be a bad smell around Trump and Russia. And, you know, perhaps that's unfair because he didn't collude with Putin, according to Mueller. But I think you can certainly say that the actions of some people around him have caused that.
John, thank you so much for talking to us today.
That's all right. Thanks for having me.
You can follow all of John Swain's reporting on the Mueller investigation at theguardian.com. Coming up, the playground designed to keep poor kids out. Now, Harriet Grant has been reporting on a new housing development in London that's been accused of blocking the children who live in social housing from using the shared play areas.
We were contacted by a resident of a really big, beautiful housing development in Lambeth. The thing that immediately struck me was that she said, our children's friends who live in that block there are social housing residents, so they're not allowed to use this play space that's right in front of their building. I visited the estate with an architect called Dinah Bornat, who is an advisor to the Mayor of London and an expert in children play design planning. And her mouth dropped when we were walking about this development. She gasped. She said, this is segregation. This is terrible. I've never seen anything like this. Where on the plans there were gates, there were hedges. There were blocks where you couldn't get through, where there was obviously a path, but someone had just put a hedge on it so you could no longer continue on to travel between the two sets of spaces. It was visually shocking. So the residents feel that they were promised one thing, and having moved in, there was a completely different type of development. They, across the board, private and social, felt they'd been promised a family-friendly development. The social housing residents thought they had access to all the play spaces. It was only when they moved in they found out they couldn't use the play spaces. The private residents feel that the atmosphere is poisonous on the development because some children are being segregated. And I went in and met Salvatore and Danielle, the family who live in the social housing. Like many of the residents, their son is disabled and is in a wheelchair. He's 10. Salvatore, he said, I hate it here. I wish we'd never moved here. My children shouldn't know who owns and who rents. And they look out of the window and they know that they can't play there because we don't own our property. I could really see this in the parents, that they felt really upset by that inequality and by their children being exposed to it. The city's desk has been inundated with people wanting to talk about this, and Twitter has gone crazy for it. We've had lots of MPs, the Shadow Education Secretary Angela Rayner, Rachel Reeves, Ed Miliband, all saying this shouldn't be allowed. I think people are surprised, but to me, when you look at the situation of how housing is being built for profit, which is how most housing is built, it's an unsurprising consequence. We have a 10-year plan in London to build 650,000 homes, and half of all London residents are under 25. So there's a huge need for housing for young people. There are many, many ways in which that's not happening. Too small flats, not enough shared space is one of them. Developers only have to build for under fives if they can show there's a park nearby. But when I read that as a parent, I think, well, what 6, 7, 8-year-old goes to a park on their own? They don't in London. So we're building children out of our cities.
You can read Harriet Grant's report for Guardian Cities on our website. That's it for today. My thanks to Harriet Grant and to John Swain. Thanks for listening and tuning in to Today in Focus, where we will always want to hear what you think. So do leave a review and feel free to subscribe. Today's episode was produced by Mithali Rao, Rachel Humphreys and Ian Chambers, with sound design from Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.